Yes, Dr. Bohansky, this is Heather Broaddus. Dr. Bohansky?
Hello, Heather. I'm present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Brundage?
Present.
Dr. Davy?
Present.
Mr. Donaldson?
Present.
Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Ms. Shreve?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you very much. We'd like to move to agenda item number 3. And I certainly want to recognize all the board members for your hard work over this past month. Each board member spends many hours preparing for each meeting, not only these meetings, but committee meetings as well. I greatly appreciate the time and effort. And certainly I also want to acknowledge the efforts of our staff, without whom we couldn't do all of this. They help us in so many ways, and I want to thank them for all the work that they've done. As we move on, I also want to acknowledge at this meeting, Dr. Matthew Meyer has been nominated to the board, I believe is undergoing confirmation or will undergo confirmation hearings here in the near future. He is from Arizona State University and has been appointed into one of our positions as an academic member of the board. So he's present with us for his first meeting today. Moving right along, item number 4.
Actually, a second meeting. We had a meeting last week.
Please go ahead. What was that?
I'm sorry. I was just going to say Dr. Myers did a committee meeting last week.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. So you're breaking him in into the application process.
Well, thank you. I appreciate being here. Looking forward to meeting you all in person.
Very good.
I'm sorry.
Moving on to agenda item number 4, a call to the public. Heather, is there anyone who has requested to speak?
Not at this time, not for a call to the public.
Excellent. Thank you. We'll move to agenda item number 5, council update. Ms. Galvin, do you have an update for the board?
I do. Good morning, board members. You will recall that we have the two matters pending in Superior Court. The first one involves Dr. Gray. If you recall, Dr. Gray challenged the board's authority to accept and investigate anonymous complaints. All briefing is complete. It's kind of a nuanced. The board had filed a motion for summary judgment, and that was denied. And the judge basically said that they were going to issue a ruling on the documents that had been filed to date. We don't expect an oral argument, but hopefully in the next 60 days or so, a decision will be rendered. Then you have Dr. Denbor, who challenged the board's application of ARS 322081C relating to court-appointed services and providers, and the application of that statute, whether it applies to services rendered prior to the effective date of that statute. Just in the last day or two, you will recall that the board did receive a positive ruling from the court. They ruled in our favor, and in the last couple days we filed a form of judgment, and once that is signed by the court, the appeal time for Dr. Denbor begins to run. He has indicated that he intends to appeal the matter to the Court of Appeals, and in November or December, I believe, at your December meeting, because a stay had been agreed to some time ago when all of this started, you voted to keep that stay in place pending the outcome of the appeal. So I will keep you informed by our next meeting. The appeal time should be running, and I will let you know whether an appeal has been filed. But that's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Are there any questions or comments for Ms. Galvin? I'll move on to agenda item number 6, which is our consent agenda. For the record, are there any recusals from items on the consent agenda? A board member may request to remove any item from the consent agenda for independent discussion and or action. Are there any requests to remove an item? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve items on the consent agenda?
So moved.
I'll second.
Thank you. Is there a second? We have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
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 For the record, Dr. Bohansky. Dr. Bohansky, this is Jean. Dr. Bohansky, this is Jean Galvin. For the record, Dr. Meyer should recuse himself for consideration of the minutes of December 7th, 2018, because he was not present.
Very good. We'll have Dr. Myers noted as a recusal on that item. Thank you.
I don't believe I was at that meeting either. This is Ms. Shreve.
Ms. Shreve will be noted as recused from not attending that meeting as well. Thank you very much. Any other considerations, clarifications? Great. Then I would like to move on to agenda item number 7. This is a discussion, consideration, and possible action relating to an initial case review. And just to remind the board that the purpose of this initial case review is to determine whether there may be a violation of rule or statute. Just the possibility. We're not trying it at this point. Obviously, the board can vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A and 2 to review confidential records, or under ARS 38431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Individuals wishing to speak must complete a request to speak form and provide that to our staff. And you'll be provided certainly an opportunity to speak to the board. Agenda item number 7A is a complaint. It's complaint number 1808 pertaining to Mark Mager, Saidi. Are there any board members who need to recuse from this case? Hearing none. Dr. Brundage, you are the lead board member. For this agenda item, would you please provide the board with a factual overview of the case?
Thank you, Chairman Bohansky, and presenting it to the board members. Investigation 18-08, Mark Measures, license number 4010, was involved with a client who was involved in a very difficult custody proceeding. Dr. Mager was appointed by the court to conduct a psychoval on AT. Psychoval was not conducted due to financial constraints. The court ordered on October 2017 that AT was to select a provider from her list. Licensee agreed and quoted a fee of $2,500. January 10th, 2018, court appointed Dr. Mager. At that point, there were correspondence back and forth. Dr. Mager had applied a discount to AT because of her military service, and initially saying that it was $5,000, but that it would be dropped to $2,500. At that point, there was a lot of pressure back and forth. AT received an inappropriate text prior to the first appointment regarding a loan to one of Mager's clients of $50,000. The information that was conveyed was very... First, AT ignored it because she felt that it was just a mistake, but later found out that it was actually sent to her. AT stated immediately, after the first appointment, stated that her fee had increased to $10,000 because of the complexity of the case. But again, because of the 50% discount, she only had to pay $5,000. AT alleges that Dr. Mager, quote, harassed her about the payment. He would continue to text her and call her at inappropriate times, asking for funds earlier than the previously agreed, details about the funds, offered to pick up funds at her home or business, and requested to pay in cash rather than a cashier's check. AT felt very, very harassed, and sometimes would receive up to 20 to 30 calls a day, and he would continue texting. AT alleges a violation of the AP ethics code in person, and he did not act as a professional. She did consult with her veterans counselor, and during that time, she really kind of felt out, is this appropriate behavior or not? While she was in the veterans, she was seeing her counselor for 30 minutes, he actually texted four times. And at that point, then the counselor and people indicated that because of the harassment, because of the pressure, that they felt that he no longer could represent her in custody. She severed relationships at that time. Licensee was notified that there was a complaint and contacted board in an appropriate time. He said that AT had contacted him and that he estimated her fee for service and would not have been able to determine final fee until he evaluated the case. Once licensee received minute entry from the court, he increased his fee due to the complexity of the case. He insisted fees still included 50% discount to veterans. AT canceled all but one appointment. Dr. Mager refused to work on case until retainee was paid. He called numerous times and texted numerous times because AT had indicated that she had sometimes problems receiving calls at work. Licensee confirms that AT received a chain text message inappropriately. Mager never provided psychological services. So at this time, that is my brief summary.
Thank you very much, Dr. Brundage. Staff, do we have anyone who would like to speak?
Yes, we have Dr. Mager and his attorney present.
Is the complainant AT present?
Not that I'm aware. I've not received a request to speak.
All right, then not hearing that. Dr. Mager, do you or your attorney wish to make a statement?
Good morning. It's Charlie Hover, attorney on behalf of Dr. Mager. Thank you, Dr. Brundage, for the summary. It is fairly complete and accurate. Dr. Mager has replied in detail in writing, which I'm sure you all have before you and have read. Dr. Mager...
Can I ask, we move a little closer to the microphone. Some of
sure.
us are having difficulty hearing.
Is this better? Can you hear me?
That's better, thank you.
Okay. Dr. Mager is here to answer any questions that you may have. The purpose of my comments this morning is to confirm that after going to the Complaint Screening Committee, listening to the concerns raised by the committee there, Dr. Mager is aware of and acknowledges the concerns and the potential violations of the ethics codes that were identified. As a result, Dr. Mager has begun independent study to try and get a handle on how things should have gone down better. And to that end, he has taken a 10-hour CE course in ethics, a practical guide for psychologists. He has taken a 1-hour CE course on counselor wellness He has taken a two-hour CE course on best practices for mental health professionals and has taken a three-hour CE course on ethics and boundary issues, all of these on CE for Less, which he had to take a test afterwards and scored 100% on all of those. This is all to say that Dr. Major has heard the concerns of the board through the Complaint Screening Committee, acknowledges those concerns, and is educating himself and more than open to any suggestions or requests or requirements from this board to address those specific issues and concerns. With that, Dr. Major is here to answer any questions that the board may have on the matter. Thank you.
Thank you. It may have been with the phone microphone being a distance, but could you please introduce yourself again so that we have it for the record?
Charles Hover, attorney for Dr. Major.
Thank you very much. Do any board members have questions for Dr. Major?
Chairman Bohansky, I do.
Dr. Brundage,
may I proceed? Dr. Major, some of these questions I've already asked you in the Complaint Screening Committee. However, I think that I would like your answers to be shared with the rest of the board members. Of particular concern, of course, is the amount of calling and texting. And I had asked you at that time whether this was a normal procedure for you.
No, it wasn't typical.
Sir, I can hardly hear you. Would you speak louder and toward the mic?
Yeah, it was not typical.
Okay. And at what time did you feel that it was necessary to move in this fashion?
I don't specifically know what you're talking about. I mean, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Can I clarify the question?
Sure. Thank you.
Why was this case so different than the way that you have collected fees in the past?
Well, first of all, I was trying to accommodate the AT and trying to do that in a way that would leave her less time away from work so that she could come for the initial session and the initial meeting regarding the letter of engagement, as well as dropping off the retainer, and to be able to stay in the office then at that point for the first beginning of the evaluation.
Who is ultimately responsible for the timetable of her evaluation?
Well, she is.
Correct. And so somehow you felt pressure that you needed to have this finished. Can you explain to me your request that you wanted money paid in cash rather than cashier's check?
No, it was either cash or cashier's check, or she could certify the her check at the bank, that kind of thing. But
okay.
Not.
And you offered to pick this up at her home or her office.
Let me correct. In initially, she was going to meet at my office, and we had like 5 hours blocked out. And then, as part of the evaluation, it was going to be a home study. So one of the times that we had scheduled was going to be at her home, which I was willing to receive the retainer at that time. time, again, to try to save her having to come and go and take time off and all that sort of thing. And then there was a day when I was going to need to traverse the area where she had described her office was, and I'd be able to take care of that in that manner. So there were numerous times when she made appointments, didn't keep them as things developed, so on.
Yes, and that information is documented.
Yeah.
I would note to board members on page 68 of 107 of our materials, there was a text sent out to AT with regard to Lenny. And within that text, it indicated that that you had a friend, Lenny, that I work with who has an opportunity to run for by your consideration. He's in a cash crunch due to recent medical expenses for his mother, and his mother just died, paid her nursing home, etc. And so he needs a financial help. A great case, he apparently had some kind of legal thing with MGM, and he was supposed to get a huge amount of money, so that he needed $100,000 and that they would receive $500,000 back. Initially, AT thought that this had been sent to her by mistake. However, I think you later confirmed that you actually had sent this. Is this a regular part of your practice?
No, it is not a part of my practice, and I did not intend to send that to her. It did come from me, but I didn't intend to send it to her. I goofed up on that.
Okay. And can you explain to me who's Lenny?
Lenny is a friend and an associate.
Is Lenny a client?
No.
Dr. Major, is Lenny a client?
No.
Okay. That's all the questions I have at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Brundage. Are there other board members who have questions?
I'd like to ask some too, but whoever was talking, go ahead.
This is Dr. Malott. My question is, typically when clients owe money or you're clarifying, what kind of practice do you use? You know, the method of contacting, reminders, you know, people don't pay. You know, most of us are familiar with that, with doctor's offices where you get monthly reminders. I'm just curious about your practice.
When patients don't show? I didn't hear all of your question.
I'm just curious about your practice in billing clients and if people are late and how do you do it, what form of communication, what is the frequency, you know, the whole process.
Okay. So typically in these kinds of cases, there's a retainer, and it's based on what the estimate of the involvement and the complexity of the situation is. When the retainer, if it's there's one of two ways. Either it's like a flat fee, or it's per hour. In the per hour kind of scenario, when things get down, depending on what the assignment is, for example, if it's therapeutic intervention, then usually it's per hour because you have no idea how, you know, what's going to be going on in terms of frequencies of visits, complexity, telephone time, email time, whatever it might be. And so when it gets down to, when the retainer drops to a point where there's only about 3 hours of fees remaining, then they're required to recharge the retainer. And they receive a notice a reminder about that. And that allows for the event happening that, you know, if they don't want to, or they want to withdraw from the situation, or they just, they can't, or they don't want to come up with the retainer money again, despite what they had agreed to, that, you know, there's the retainer money there to be able to write a report for the court and then see where things proceed from there. Does that answer your question?
I'm okay for now. I know Dr. Flowers had a question. I'm fine for right now.
Okay, yes, thank you. I was wondering, in looking through the documentation, if there was any written signed agreement with the complainant regarding the services that you provide and your fees.
No, she never showed up for So the service agreement was not signed. She was going to sign it in person, and at that point, also provide retainer money.
Okay, so because I saw a lot of text messages and so forth, but I never saw any kind of contract. So apparently there was, you were talking about it, but she never showed up to actually sign an agreement about what you would do and what it would cost. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And from what I gather, you actually never did have any meetings with her in person?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm wondering, too, I guess this touches on some of what was Dr. Brundage was talking about, but I was wondering what the need would be for, you'd even, I think, ask that she even call you late at night regarding the status of getting the money, even wanted to know which bank would be drawn on. It just, I was puzzled by how that would be, it would be that urgent, even on a weekend, to give updates.
Well, AT had explained to me that she and her husband, in addition to her job, that they were starting, that they had started some sort of a business, and so her hours between that and childcare demands, as well as healthcare demands placed on her by her husband, that her hours would vary erratically. So it's not uncommon for when I leave a message, and I appreciate when people leave me a message, let me know how late or how early calling or contacting might be. And if I'm home writing a report or something like that, I might be up, you know, rather late. So if I left a time that was late, that was just in order to accommodate if she was going to be, you know, called on in one of those kinds of demands on her that would throw off her schedule.
Okay. I'm wondering, too, at one point I saw you asked that she prepare a detailed history of herself and problems and even have it all typewritten and ready. Is that, again, is this something standard for how you start up clients?
I often do that because it allows the, I feel that it allows the person to be able to express themselves and how they're seeing the situation that they're in, especially with regard to court matters. Rather than having them start with sort of forced choices to make, and it gives me more of a projective view of what they're about and what's going on or how they're viewing it.
So it's kind of like in a way a background questionnaire, but they would you'd be more specific about what you're hoping to get to expedite the process.
Yeah, that's correct. And then the clinical evaluation that I have that I utilize is something that I pulled together over the course of years of being at various sites, medical centers, and working with courts and police and so on. So I've got structured and some unstructured parts of the clinical interview. And having that to look over for a few minutes while they're filling out some basic information in the office helps to give me some a different vantage of what's going on for them and how they're viewing the situation.
And I'm wondering, As far as your background, I believe you indicated that you had done other work for the courts in regards to cases such as this. Is this right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And is this an unusual situation, or is this kind of how a lot of them go when you work them up?
This whole thing was an unusual situation all the way around. I mean, I agreed to do a home visit because she was living in Peoria, near Metro Center, but she, from the timetable of things, she knew that she was moving to Levine, and that move and so on would be after we would have gotten started. And I mean, there was, you know, all kinds of things that weren't disclosed. But
okay, all right, thank you. Those are all my questions for now.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Flower.
Chairman,
are there any other board members who have a question?
Chairman, this is Ms. Shreve. I do have questions too.
Ms. Shreve, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dr. Major. I represent the general public. I'm not a psychologist. AT was coming to you for custody, for evaluation due to a custody. And it appears from the documentation you had first quoted an amount, $2,500, and then up to $5,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Do you often, when you are coming for a custody evaluation, do you feel that the client potentially feels like they need to not necessarily please you, but they're trying to put their best foot forward, they want everything to go well, because there is definitely a very important element to them, their child's at stake in their mind. Do you think that that's correct?
Dr. Major, if I may, Ms. Shreve and members of the board, this is Jean Galvin. It was an independent psychological evaluation of AT, the wife, the mother in this case, but it wasn't specifically a custody evaluation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Just so that.
Okay. So it wasn't
clear.
So, but you did you did increase the dollar amount when you have a client that you're calling up to 27 times a day and texting. How do you think the client is perceiving your behavior?
I'm not sure how she was perceiving my behavior.
Do you think it could be perceived as desperate, harassing? I mean, how do you think a client could perceive someone, or how would you perceive someone calling you 27 times or texting you constantly day and night?
Well, I think that if I had appointments set that involved large amounts of time and were set on particular days to accommodate my schedule, that I wouldn't just blow them off. I would, you know.
I guess I go back to Dr. Brundage's questions. Whose responsibility is it for your client to come to the appointment and to get the assessment completed?
That's a very good question. I mean, they're all good questions. So, an early mistake that I made in this situation was being overly accommodating and varying from typical routine. I mean, the routine comes from years of experience, and I should have had the initial appointment for the service agreement or letter of engagement, depending on what kind of evaluation it is, but in this case, the service agreement, and to have waited, you know, to give an idea in writing in terms of email about to follow up on the conversation as to what was being quoted, whether it was flat fee, whether it was, you know, whether it was per hour, as well as my understanding from the conversation of what the constraints were of what was being asked of me and what was being offered by me. Or if it was a different situation where there might be an order but not a particular appointment, and they may have to go back with their attorney or themselves, if they're proper, to get the particular appointment so that they can't play games and pull the releases of information, I would have that able to be forwarded to me, or if there was a reassignment for some reason, if there was an order that delineated things, then I would be able to refer to that and do that. That was a mistake that I made early on, was deviating from sets, from set procedures.
Just a minute, Dr. Major. Dr. Brundage, are you on? Okay, we're having technical difficulties. Dr. Brundage got knocked off, can't get back on, so she's also on the cell phone. All right, proceed.
So,
shall I proceed?
No, Dr. Major is answering a question from Ms. Shree.
Yes,
thank you very much.
I erred right in the beginning by deviating from typical practice, and I don't feel it was an error to be willing to ask if there were extenuating circumstances or to be willing to offer discount to veterans and so on. I don't know how well that works out, but what else to do?
Dr. Major, do you believe your actions were professional?
I let the boundaries get somewhat porous right from the beginning. So.
All right. I have no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shreve. Are there any other board members who have a question? Hearing none. Dr. Brundage, as I've indicated earlier, the focus of this is just the initial case review, is to determine if there may be a violation of statute or rule. Could you begin the deliberation of this case for us?
Yes, Dr. Bohansky. Wait one moment. I'm putting in earphones so it may be clear. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, much better.
Thank you.
Very clear.
Thank you. Chairman Bohansky and board members, I heard clearly that Dr. Major has made efforts in continuing education. I am concerned that it was all online, I believe. But I don't think that continuing education can provide the type of support that this doctor needs. I was appalled at his behavior. I believe that at this point, he still is not clear about the level of unprofessionalism that he displayed. I find that his answers are somewhat, I don't think he gets it. So I would move that this goes into an informal where we can look at all of the cases that he has. There were some allegations that the AT found that this was not something that was solely due to her case, that it perhaps had happened before. I just find that the repetitiveness, the hounding, and certainly the request for money may have been sent out, and he claims that it wasn't supposed to be sent out to her, but all of it just reeks of unprofessionalism. I was appalled. And then to have it documented by the counselor at the Veterans Administration that he called 4 times in 30 minutes, I don't know how other board members, but I was very, very distressed. Thank you.
Is that a motion, Doctor?
Yes, I make a motion that case number 18-08 with Mark Major, side D, license number 4010, be forwarded to the board for informal. And that would be based on several things. Let me hold on.
It's just a tear somewhere. It's not coming through the mic.
The ethical and codes that I would have concerns about. I'm sorry for the delay. Are several. I think his business practices have lots of room for concern. He clearly understood that the urgency was with AT, and yet he ended up having the AT, having her take on a form that just was not appropriate. I would like it forwarded complaint number 18-08 for informal for possible violation of ARS 32-2061, 16-0 for possibly providing services that are unnecessary or safe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice in ARS 32-2061, 16-DD for possibly violating an ethical standard adopted by the board as it pertains to the American Psychological Association Ethical Principles of Psychologists Code of Conduct 5.06 in-person solicitation and 6.04 fee and financial rate arrangements.
Thank you, Doctor. Is there a second?
A second. I agree with Dr. Brundage's comments.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'm wondering about a possible violation with dual relationships.
Ms. Galvin, I guess I want you to clarify.
Well, I didn't know about seeking a loan for one of his associates. Would that violate the ethical principle against dual relationships, just a solicitation?
I would be interested in other board members. It doesn't ring true for me.
Oh, that's fine. I was just going to...
Yeah. It doesn't because the dual relationship implies, you have other relationships with this person outside the client itself. He brought in his associate. So I'm not sure. Maybe in the... informal hearing if you have more information.
Okay, very good.
That might be it.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Dr. Bohansky, I think that it would also be interesting to me. Obviously, we have this case and we'll review that, but I would be curious if it would be within our scope to review any other cases he has, because the allegations that AT is not the first one is very concerning.
Very good. We have a motion and a second on the table. Do we need a roll call vote?
I would prefer that you have a roll call vote. I do believe that Dr. Brundage's last statement is maybe more of a question, and whether she's directing staff to seek additional records of Dr. Majors that relate to court-appointed cases because of the allegations made by AT that this has happened to other individuals?
That's correct.
So is that part of your motion that staff... Is that part of the motion that staff would, on behalf of the board, issue a subpoena to Dr. Major for some of those records?
I guess I'd be very curious. I think we have enough with this case that I don't want to. I guess I'm asking other board members if you feel this would be fruitful, or do we just stick with this case? I am concerned that AT alleged that there were other cases of this sort.
I would be concerned of a pattern of behavior. I think it would be diligent to look, since the issue's been brought up, is to look at other cases.
Mr. Chairman? My concern would be difficult to do that because we don't know how many people he's seen for what, and when we say we'd like to look at some of them, we would ask him to send us some. It I think that'd be really kind of complicated and hard to follow through. I would prefer we just pursue this one with the documentation regarding to this case. Certainly it is troubling about others, but if she's been in practice for years and let's just say seen 20, do we want to go through 20 more? Certainly it is concerning that it could have happened, but I'd rather that we just stick with this one for now. The other parts of the motion I fully agree with.
I'm with Dr. Flowers because, again, when you say some, you know, he gets to choose, and then we are left with, okay, these are good, these, you know, so I think just sticking to the case is probably the direction to go. But now, I mean, who knows, in the informal, we may request other information. So.
Exactly. Thank you very much. So the motion was not amended. It is as it was, and the second is as it was. I'd like to go ahead and have a vote, please. Ms. Brodus, could you call the roll?
Yes. Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you very much. Dr. Manger, the board staff will be in communication with you in terms of scheduling further hearings on this. Thank you, everyone. We're going to keep moving. Agenda item number 8 is discussion, consideration, and possible action taken against Edmund Badaline, PhD, psychology license issue with the Minnesota Board of Psychology. Ms. Brodus, could you provide the board with an update in this matter?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Bohansky, members of the board. ASPBB collects disciplinary information from each jurisdiction, and the board receives a report every 3 to 4 months, and board staff goes through that report and checks each licensee against our database. And it was noted on one of our more recent reports that Dr. Nadolny did have discipline in the state of Minnesota. He's also licensed as a psychologist in Minnesota, and board staff searched Minnesota's website and did find the consent agreement in order, and that order became effective on August 21st, 2018. Dr. Nadolny did submit his renewal application prior to this order, so there was no renewal, you know, during that time where he would have had to report the information. And the consent agreement in order was provided to you and is before you for review. Dr. Nadolny is present and is willing to answer any questions that the board has. And then if I could just remind the board, too, that any health information is considered confidential and to not disclose that in public session. And that concludes my summary, unless you have any questions for me.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. Bowles? Okay, the question then to the board is we have an option of opening a complaint ourselves, but we don't have to. We can choose to move forward with such a thing or take no action at all. Are there any thoughts, discussions, questions, having reviewed the material that was provided to you regarding the Minnesota case?
Mr. Chairman?
Please, go ahead.
Yes, looking at it, you know, certainly there are concerns that were expressed in Minnesota regards to what was going on back there that led to the disciplinary action. Certainly we have to be concerned about whether that could be an issue here in Arizona with clients. And I think it would be appropriate to open a complaint on the basis of it's ARS 32-2061, unprofessional conduct in another jurisdiction that resulted in censure, probation, or civil penalty. We could also do it for the same issue as in Minnesota. I'm not clear that we would have to do that as well, but certainly for the statutory violation of being disciplined in another jurisdiction. Certainly it is good that he is appears to be cooperating in the stipulations of the, his disciplinary in Minnesota, and hopefully that continues and is completed and he goes back to full status there. That's my input.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Other comments from board members? Hearing none. Dr. Flowers, is that a motion to open a complaint here?
I can amend what I, let me just modify it a bit. What I would do is recommend that there be a complaint open based on ARS 32-2061, unprofessional conduct in another jurisdiction that resulted in censure, probation, or civil penalty, or in the denial, suspension, restriction, or revocation of a certificate or license to practice as a psychologist. And I would end with just that one.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Flower. Is there a second to that motion? I hear no second. I believe the motion will die for lack of second. By doing such, the board is taking the position of taking no action on this matter. Although I would request on a voluntary basis that Doctor keep the board informed in terms of compliance with the Minnesota action and progress toward completing that. Thank you. Moving along, agenda item number 9. This discussion, consideration, possible action regarding a request to withdraw an application for licensure by waiver from Dr. Lechner, PsyD, and possible denial of the application. Dr. Malott, would you please provide the board with a summary of this matter? Dr. Malott.
Did we lose everybody? Hello?
No, sorry, I was on mute. So I just turned off my mute.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Lechner, I hope I'm saying it correctly, the application review committee, myself and Dr. Flowers reviewed Dr. Lechner's application. Dr. Lechner earned her doctorate in 2007, from Capella, and her degree, if you look at her transcripts, is in general psychology and not in one of the fields of applied psychology that the board recognizes. Her doctoral program did not require pre-internship experiences. Really, her doctoral program did not have practicum. In general, pre-internship is only if you're claiming it. So just want to clarify that because it's in the memo. So we did not see any practicums, which are typically part of any doctoral program. Her doctoral program did not require an internship. Now, she did an internship, but it wasn't required. It was just done. The other problem is that her internship was done with an immediate family member. So there's a real good example of dual relationships. And her internship did not have two licensed psychologists. The person who was supervising here was a parent. And then Dr. Lechner paid her supervisor for postdoctoral supervision, which again, it could be problematic based on our statutes. On December 18th, a request to withdraw her application was received by Dr. Lechner. All correspondence and attachments are included for board review. So that's kind of where it stands. At this point, you know, I think definitely up for board discussion, do we allow her to withdraw her application, or do we, do we deny it? So.
Very good. Are there questions, comments?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers.
Mr. Bryant, Dr. Bronsky. Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay, can I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I heard voices so forth on the line there, wasn't sure. She also sent a letter to the board requesting that we look at all the information she had and see if we can still approve the licensure request. One issue she gave was a letter from the dean of her school. Basically, it said that he indicated that she completed all the clinical psychology requirements. But in looking at the actual letter from Dr. Garvey House, he did not state that. It indicated he said that she indeed participated fully in the clinical psychology program for a 13-month period before changing her degree to general psychology. And so indeed, she participated in the program, but she did not complete it. And she indicated as well that Oregon accepted her internship. Indeed, apparently they did, but their standards are not identical to those of Arizona. She indicated that her doctoral program did not require an internship, which is why she didn't do it. But indeed, it's not required in an area that is not a practice area, so that's the problem. And she did clarify that she was not based on productivity while in her training status, which is good. But she did verify that she paid for her postdoctoral supervision. And apparently on the letter that we sent to her, we put down that she had a PsyD rather than a PhD, which was incorrect. But the bottom line is that for a number of issues, she's not eligible for licensure in Arizona. I don't really know that. Well, my feeling is she should be given the opportunity to withdraw her application. She put that in the letter. If we don't approve it, that she'd like to withdraw. I feel that would be okay, that she would be allowed to withdraw the application, but otherwise she does not meet the requirements for licensure in this state for the reasons we specified.
And this is Dr. Malott again, Dr. Bohansky. You know, some states do allow, and I know Washington for sure allows postdoctoral supervisors to be paid. So technically she's not in violation in that state. And some states probably don't require somebody to be in an applied program as long as they meet the requirements. So I'm in favor of also accepting her withdrawal. She does not meet our requirements.
Dr. Flower raised an interesting point. I have a question. Is her degree a PhD or a PsyD?
I didn't follow your question, Dr. Bohansky, I think.
Staff says it's a side.
Okay, the transcript says it's a PhD.
All right, we're looking.
Okay, we have the transcript.
I'm looking at a transcript, too. Capella, I'm on page 52. It says PhD in psychology.
Okay. Why I raised the point, and we have dealt with this before, is the course catalog for this university clearly states the PhD in general psychology is for individuals interested in academics and research and not for licensure. Not for licensure. Whereas the PsyD program, is specifically designed in that university to meet licensure. If we have a candidate listing themselves as having completed the PsyD, then they really completed the PhD. That's what's on their transcript. That's what's in the catalog. I even have some trouble with allowing her to withdraw.
Here's a suggestion, Dr. Bohansky. I think we should allow her to withdraw, but we do need to send a letter to the Oregon and the Washington board indicating that we did consider this as an issue and it's up to them to review it since she is a licensee in their jurisdiction.
Is that a motion, Dr. Malott?
Okay, it's my motion that we allow her to withdraw, but we ask staff to send a letter to the board indicating concerns. Actually, I'd like to add two concerns. One concern is the fact that, you know, she completed an internship with her parents. Maybe they didn't catch that. And the second one is this degree thing.
I will second that motion because I agree with it. Do we need a roll call vote or can we do a...
No, you do not need a
voice vote on this. Is there further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Refusals? Motion approved.
One second.
Thank you.
The whole issue of PsyD, I just want to back up. I'm looking at her letter. She says her degree is a PhD and not a PsyD. So I'm trying to figure out why that was raised.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Malott?
Uh-huh.
What she was doing was pointing out what she thought were erroneous things in what we sent her when we told her that we didn't feel she was qualified. And so she pointed out, you know, and lastly, I don't have a PsyD, I have a PhD. And so
Have a PhD.
Yeah, so I just said, yes, you're right. I felt like throwing in that's wonderful, but the issue is it's not, her degree is not an applied area, PsyD or PhD. But, you know,
we had a motion to inform the psych board that when it's a non-issue. So I'm kind of a little...
The issue is she didn't qualify based on the things we specified. I don't think that it's the PhD versus PsyD in this is the issue.
So the issue that she completed an internship with her dad.
Well, that and she didn't really have a practice area in her doctorate.
I'm sorry to bring this up. I really don't think we can raise that as an issue. That is a concern in Arizona.
Yeah. There are places where
they
don't require that.
In Washington, it might be they're just looking at coursework, and as long as you meet or looking at... I mean, I don't know what they're looking at. I'm not familiar with their standards.
Okay, it's not critical that that be in the letter.
Dr. Malott and Dr. Bohansky, do you want to withdraw your motion and the second and reframe the motion that it would be allow her to withdraw her application and notify the Oregon-Washington boards that she completed an internship with one of her parents?
Yes, that to me is appropriate. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the whole discussion on the PhD PsyD and I got confused.
So the so I'll go ahead and I'm going to ask that we withdraw our motion.
I'll modify the second as well, but I'm also going to clearly state this university issues a PhD for research and academic activities in which their course catalog clearly states it's not for licensure. The content of the degree is not for licensure. I am concerned that while we read the course catalog, other jurisdictions may not be as thorough as we are. And sometimes you need to point out in this regulatory field.
I'm having such a hard time understanding that. Yeah, I think that's where some of my confusion is coming. So it's very muffled. That's the problem I'm having. Miss Galvin, you're very, very clear. Is it possible for you to repeat what you just heard?
From Dr. Bohansky?
Yeah.
Dr. Bohansky was stating that the catalog from this university makes very clear that the PhD program is for research and academics. It is not for licensure purposes. And he is concerned that possibly the other two jurisdictions who have granted her licensure are not as thorough as this board is and may not have realized that the PhD she obtained is specifically for research or academic purposes and not for licensure. And that's his concern.
Yeah, and I think also the issue about the internship with family member,
yeah,
and the supervisor. Those are the two key things. I'm wondering too if we would need to undo the motion that we passed and then do another one.
It appears that is the direction that the board is headed, if only for the reason that
okay.
The PhD versus society is not a concern anymore.
Definitely.
I have a question. This is Ms. Shreve.
Uh-huh.
So in the catalog, you know, you take these courses. So those courses are not can't be applied to a practical PhD. I mean, okay, so the catalog says this, but if you're taking a certain course, maybe you offer it the same course in your program, but you say it's applicable. I mean, isn't that the state's responsibility to determine what is applicable? I think we're kind of stepping out a little bit regards to the catalog. I'm very comfortable with the parent relationship issue, but, you know, they interpret the courses that she took as applicable to their state. I don't know if it's for us to say anything differently.
I have a suggestion. I think what we can do is we can write a letter to the board in our regard to work with staff and basically say, you know, so and so applied to our license, she didn't meet our requirements for these reasons, and we can point that out. However, we wish to inform the board that we were very concerned that she completed the internship with her parents, which is kind of a violation of the ethical code, you know, something like that. And I'm sure Ms. Galvin will help. And so we point out why we didn't consider her degree because of this, but I don't think we were saying, you know, that they made a mistake or they didn't do a thorough review. So, you know what I mean? So we're giving the information, but in a little more indirect manner. What do you think of that solution?
Well, within that, though, would state that the degree, the training was not in a practice area. It was for, as Dr. Bohansky pointed out, research.
What I'm recommending is in our letter, we will say why we had concerns.
Yes.
Not saying that they're concerned, but just kind of point out so they become aware of it, you know, just in case.
Dr. Galvin, is it typical for us to send a letter to another state when we've denied an application?
They're not denying it. They're allowing her to withdraw.
Allowing her to withdraw, is it our role to do that?
I don't recall it happening before, but I believe that would be within your discretion to do so.
And the thing that really concerned us, I think both Dr. Flowers and I noted, was that she completed an internship with her parent, and that's how she got her clinical work. And,
I agree with that. That is, to point that out in a nice indirect, in an indirect way. I'm not sure about the classes that she took in the sense that maybe they saw it as applicable to how, classes that you would take to get to be a, licensed psychologist in their states.
Well, before we had the licensure law in Arizona, you weren't required to have a degree in a practice area. So it could be that they're still back in that mode partially, where they just look at coursework and say, well, there's a doctorate. Yeah, there's some training here in clinical. Okay, well, that's good. So there could be different standards and rationales.
And I think what I am recommending is all we do is addressing Dr. Bohansky's concern, is all we do is just point out why we, had concerns with her application. I mean, though we haven't done that in the past, so I guess we need to be careful. And So, Ms. Galvin, what are your thoughts? I mean, we can definitely do the dual relationship issue, which is a concern. But about the other, kind of giving them information why we, why we were not supportive.
So the options would be to allow her to withdraw, allow her to withdraw, and then write a letter to other jurisdictions. And we don't know the requirements in those states, whether her coursework is sufficient for practice, whether she is allowed to have an internship with a relative. Or you can deny her. I keep hearing the board members express great concern over the fact, at least everyone is in agreement, it appears, that she had an internship with a relative, which is clearly against your standards and requirements. So you have the authority to deny her.
Dr. Malat, this is Ira. I think the issue of the parent seems to be a universal ethical issue. Is that not correct? I mean, that's not a state.
That is correct.
But I think that that's the focus, because otherwise we're interpreting or telling the states, other states, what we may or may not think is important. But I think the dual relationship is the core issue here. That's universal to everyone in this arena throughout the United States. So how do we feel strongly that we should deny it, or let her withdraw? I mean, and point that out. I feel more comfortable maybe denying it.
Yeah, I'm more comfortable with recommending, voting on a withdrawal and informing the board about the dual relationship. I think we would,
Yes, my feeling, it may be a different perspective. I think we can point out that a relative was a supervisor. I don't know that we need to spell out that we saw that as a dual relationship. I think that the boards, they can figure that out for themselves.
I would agree.
One concern, we need to be tread very carefully on what we tell other boards. Certainly Ms. Galvin said, this is unusual, but I wouldn't want the applicant to then, come after our board for, sharing business from a withdrawn application. It gets a little bit muddled.
Yes.
So the motion that was passed by the board is to allow her to withdraw and send a letter to Oregon and Washington, talking about the 2 degrees, PsyD and PhD, and whether, she misrepresented what she had, which I think upon further review we've determined she did not, and then the fact that she had this internship with one of her parents. So that is currently the board's action that they have taken.
So I think what is at least in order is a motion to withdraw that motion. And then we have a clean slate for someone to offer a subsequent motion.
So I make a motion to withdraw the previous motion.
This is Brian, I'll second that.
So Dr. Bohansky.
We have a first.
Yeah, we did. We had Ramona and then Dr. Davey seconded it to withdraw the previous motion.
All right, all in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Anyone opposed? All right. The motion is now rescinded and withdrawn, and we now stand ready for a new motion.
Great.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion that the application, the request to be withdrawn, be approved, and that we take no other action.
The motion is to approve her?
I withdraw my motion.
No, I believe, Dr. Flowers, your motion was to approve her request to withdraw.
Yes, and yeah, very simple, and not worry about the rest of it. I'm not sure if I get a second.
I second that.
We have a motion and a second to allow her to withdraw her application. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
I would ask, Dr. Wierhansky, I would ask for a roll call.
Oh, you have, okay.
Just, yes, Dr. Brundage?
I'm confused. Could we clarify what's going on?
The motion is to allow the applicant to withdraw her application, and there would be no subsequent action by the board. There would be no letter written to Oregon or Washington. Just allow her to withdraw, and that's the end of the issue.
Thank you.
And if I can just ask for further clarification, Mr. Chair, this is Dr. Davey. So that would mean, so the this motion here is very simple. It does not include a denial, and it does not include alerting other jurisdictions.
That's
thank you.
And we have a roll call.
Then? Further discussion. And let's have a roll call, please.
Yes. Dr. Brundage.
Yes.
Dr. Meyer.
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky.
No.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
No.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Ms. Shreve?
No.
Dr. Malott?
No.
We have 5 yeses, 4 noes. Motion passes.
Thank you very much. And that disposes of that matter. We'll now move to agenda item number 10. This is discussion, consideration, and possible action for approval to sit for the EPPP by Stephen Nicholson, PhD. Dr. Flowers, would you
Dr.
provide
Malott,
the board with a summary of this
myself?
Dr. Malott is recusing herself from this matter.
Dr. Nicholson is somebody that is currently teaching part-time for NAU, so I'm recusing.
Thank you. Dr. Flowers.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated, the applicant is wanting to sit for the EPPP and then upon successful completion be granted licensure. Dr. Nicholson received his PhD in counseling psychology from NAU in 2017, not an APA approved course, but his core courses appear to be acceptable. He completed an internship between August of 2016 and August 2017 at Northern Arizona Healthcare, 2,000 hours. There was adequate client contact and individual supervision. It was not an APA-approved program, but not an APIC member, but the internship and training plan appeared to be adequate. Then he also completed a postdoctoral course, or experience, I should say, at the same facility between August 2017 to July 2018, also 2,000 hours. And the postdoctoral training agreement appears to meet requirements as well. There were two references from Arizona psychologists, Dr. Seidemann and Dr. Martin. And to me, it appears that he meets the requirements for that. And so I make a motion that the applicant be approved to take the ECCP and for licensure upon successful completion of the ECCP and payment of applicable fees.
Second.
Is there a second? We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. We'll bring Dr. Malott back in. Number 11 on our agenda is a status report on a compliance with a consent agreement in case number 1726. Ms. Jones, would you provide a summary for the board?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, board members, Dr. Matanovich was placed under a consent agreement and order for probation and supervision at its July 13th meeting to 2018 in regards to case number 1726. As part of that consent agreement and order, she was to obtain monitoring with Dr. Stafford, and we recently received a letter from Dr. Stafford of his quarterly report, and it noted some deficiencies or possible concerns about late arrivals to meetings, difficulty with learning how to score the WIAT-3, and that there may need to be additional time to complete the required cases. We brought this to the board's attention as we felt it was necessary for you to review. Dr. Matanovich is here today if you wish to discuss it with her, or we could place it on a future agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there any questions for the doctor? Hearing none, I'll ask a quick one. Doctor, we have a report on your compliance with the consent agreement. It's less than sterling. Can you give us an idea of what you're doing to remediate this?
Yeah, he'll just pull it down. Thank you.
This is Dr. Matanovich, and I got his report this week. And the thing about the time compliance was that I haven't had a chance to discuss this with him, but I was I'm very punctual and careful about my appointments, and he was correct that two times when I came out, it takes me an hour to get out there, and on two occasions I did hit the train, so that I was late on two occasions, but the rest of the time I have been on time, and I have to discuss that discrepancy with him, which I have not had a chance to do. I have purchased all the tests, and I'm working with the new materials, and they're not new to many, but working in compliance with what he's telling me to do. So I feel that I haven't had a thorough discussion with why he said that about the time factor. But I have had my license since 1970, so I've never had a complaint prior to this year. So I think that these are things that can be rectified.
Are there other questions of board members? Hearing none, I would encourage Doctor to continue to meet the conditions of her consent agreement, and I look forward to seeing the next report demonstrating such improvement.
Yes, I've been accused of having an overactive superego, so I will comply with any conditions which he states. And unfortunately, this came, his response came out in December, and we haven't met yet until the end of the month. So that's why I didn't have a chance to talk to him previously. Mm-hmm. And I intend to, whatever actions that he feels I need to take, I absolutely will take and complete. So there won't be this kind of report again.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
This is Dr. Brundage. I am concerned because obviously in the past we haven't had many letters from practice monitors indicating concern. Would it be possible to ask both Dr. Safford and the doctor to appear at our next in-person meeting to kind of describe this? I understand that the doctor today has not had an opportunity to talk to Dr. Safford, but the concerns he identifies goes beyond the tardiness and the ability to be able to interpret the information. And I think that that has some impact on her ability to practice. So would we be able to hear this in an in-person meeting in a month?
Mr.
I don't know if we need an official motion, but I would ask that both Dr. Stafford and Dr.
Matanovich.
Thank you, Matanovich, be offered an opportunity to discuss progress at the next in-person meeting.
As this is part of a disciplinary process, I think we need to take a vote, a roll call vote, and that would be to invite both our psychologist and supervisor to present in-person status reports at our February meeting. I would so move. Is there a second?
Has it been seconded?
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
I believe we need a second. Dr. Bohansky was just restating the motion. Is there a second for Dr. Brundage's motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yeah, this is Ms. Sharif. I have a comment. The next meeting's in February. This was a first quarter. Was it a first quarter review?
It is.
I'm wondering if it would be, because it's been one quarter, it would be better spent if they came, we invited them to the meeting after February, which is what, is that June? The in-person meeting?
I believe the next in-person meeting is in May. And I believe that we're expecting the second quarterly report, April, the month of April.
April. So I would suggest we meet in May, give them another quarter to see how the progress is, and at that point ask them both to come in.
Is that a friendly amendment, and will that friendly amendment be accepted?
I would make a friendly amendment that we request that they come in May and give them another quarter to to basically then would have a half a year to look at the progress.
I would accept that friendly amendment.
This is Dr. Malott. Since we're making a friendly amendment, if the second quarter report does come in without any issues, then I don't know whether we would need for them to come in. So, you know, so maybe make that decision based on the second quarter report.
The executive, would the friendly amendment be that the executive director, in consultation with the chair, will look at that second report and determine whether an appearance is necessary?
I would agree to that, yes.
I would agree to that also.
And Mr. Donaldson, okay, all right, thank you. So the motion would be that we will schedule Dr. Matanovic and her supervisor for a possible appearance at the May in-person meeting, conditioned upon the receipt of the second quarterly report and whether the information contained in that report would dictate or require a personal appearance, and that will be decided by Ms. Jones in consultation with the chair.
Yes.
Okay.
Good. Do we need a roll call vote for that?
You do not.
Okay. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Motion carries. Thank you very much. We'll now move on to agenda item 13. Are there any agenda items for future meetings?
Mr. Chairman, you do have an item number 12. Regarding the consent agreement for Dr. Johnson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed that. Ms. Jones, would you go ahead and update the board on the matter?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, board members, at your December meeting, the board conducted an initial review of complaint number 1811 involving Dr. Michael Johnson. At that time, the licensee and his attorney discussed a consent agreement, an order in lieu of holding an informal interview. The information submitted to you today includes a proposed consent agreement and order, which includes a probation for a minimum of 12 months, 18 hours of continuing education pertaining to record keeping, maintaining business records, progress notes, establishing and developing treatment plans, and ethics. The continuing education shall be pre-approved by the board's executive director. The licensee shall also work with a practice monitor. The licensee will be required to meet with a practice monitor twice a month for a minimum of 2 hours each session. The practice monitor will review a minimum of 6 of the licensee's recent patient records during the first 6 months of the probationary period. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and the board may accept, reject, or modify the proposed consent agreement. And Ms. Carvis, the attorney representing Dr. Johnson, is available by phone today.
Good morning. This is Mandy Carvis. I am on the phone if anyone has any questions.
Are there any questions on the proposed consent agreement?
Mr. Chairman?
Dr. Flower?
Yeah, I had a question on, it was item 26 on the consent agenda, on the consent agreement. I wasn't clear on one issue in there. It says that the respondent shall personally attend the courses. I wasn't sure if that meant that the courses are to be like in-person trainings or what exactly that means.
It would seem to suggest that that requires in-person CEs, not online. Is that your understanding, Ms. Carvis?
I've seen it phrased both ways, so that was something I was going to ask. I told Dr. Johnson we would need to ask clarification for as well.
I would suggest that it be spelled out that it's in person, because otherwise it sounds as if make sure nobody stands in and does the course for you. I mean, you know, being kind of almost silly about it, but everybody that does CEU does it themselves, whether it's online or in person. But I'm thinking that the intent was that it be in-person CEUs, or maybe if we want to allow it, that it could be webcam or whatever online. Certainly, in person is better, but it clearly that it's not like correspondence work.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Flowers, this is Jenna. I will be happy to amend the consent agreement to include the last meeting. I specifically heard you did not want it to be online. And that
okay, that sounds very familiar. So I guess if it could be spelled out that it's like in-person CEU activities.
Thank you.
Dr. Bohansky? Dr. Brundage, I also would expand on item number 26, continuing education. One of the more grave concerns I had is boundary violation, and I'm not seeing any, it talks about ethics, but I really would like to have a specific course or something in that area. I think that was one of the more distressing parts of this case. I also would like to thank the attorney and attorney general. It seems that they have focused on the areas we've expressed its concerns, and so at this point, trying to figure out what's going on. I appreciate them and how they've responded.
Is there a suggestion from the board about how many additional continuing education hours and boundaries, or would that 18 hours include boundaries?
Dr. Bohansky, Ms. Galvin, my sense is I don't know what is available in person on boundaries or webinar. I believe that it would really pertain to what is available at this point. And, you know, I'd like him to do this sooner than later. So, again, I hesitate to ascribe certain amount of continuing ed because it may be very difficult to achieve.
This is Dr. Malak. May I speak, Dr. Bohansky?
Go right ahead, please.
I just wanted to, maybe we should put a percentage of CEs that can be completed in person. And not specify which of those, because I'm afraid that it might be difficult to get all of the different types of CEs, you know, available. So maybe we could say at least 50% of the CE should be completed in person, and then we can specify some of the CEs that we need, but not link the two together.
Is that what's intended with the language that's in the current consent agreement?
No, I think you would have to specify that, for instance, 50% of the CE would be required to be in person, 50% could be obtained through distance education, 18 hours total, if that's what the board is thinking, with the addition that of those 18, perhaps a specific number three has to be in the area of boundaries?
That's what I'm hearing. Could we rewrite it with that paragraph or stipulate to that paragraph in it?
Yes.
Yes, and is that something that counsel for Dr. Johnson would be agreeable to?
Yes, we would be agreeable to that.
Okay, with the consent agreement amended and agreement between our councils involved, do we need a motion to pass this?
You do, and then I would also appreciate as part of that motion, it would also include a statement that the informal interview would be vacated.
Okay, then I will move that we vacate the informal interview, accept the modified the consent agreement as reviewed here this morning. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Is there further discussion? We have a motion and a second on the floor.
We do need a roll call.
We have a disciplinary situation, so it is a roll call vote. And we have a roll call. Ms. Brodus, please.
Yes. Ms. Shreve?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
And Dr. Bohansky?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to move on to agenda item 13. Are there items, issues for future meetings? Hearing none, we will move to agenda item number 14, which is a call for a motion for adjournment. I wish you all a pleasant Friday as we are now into Saturday here. So I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Seconded.
All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 And opposed? No one. Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.